This week, I have, as I'm sure you have, we've seen the news reports and hear what's going on in the Middle East and other parts of the world. I'm sorry, I forget every Sunday. The children are excused to children's church because I know you will enjoy that more than hearing me rambling on. Okay, start again. This week, like most of you, I have seen news reports and been hearing the rumblings coming out of the Middle East, and it looks like it's really bad. Certainly it is. There are atrocities being committed there. There have been a lot of people who were killed needlessly. The innocent have been murdered in some cases, and there's a lot of turmoil and a lot of trouble going on. You see a lot, and it creates a kind of stress. And one of the things that I believe a pastor ought to do is that when there are things going on that his congregation is dealing with, I think the best way to handle them is to face them head on, and let's talk about them and have a discussion, or at least hear me discuss what we need to do and see if God can show us how we ought to react and what things we ought to be doing. So this morning, the title is The Rapture. I had told him to put the rapture question mark, and of course he didn't like that, so he put just the rapture. That's fine. But I want us to look at this notion of what is going to happen. These are crazy times we live in. If we read in 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 9 through 13, I believe it's on the back of your bulletin, says, "The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is longsuffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth and also the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness." So my thesis, or my question to start this service off, is, are the events that are taking place in the Middle East currently ushering in the end times? Many people today believe that Bible prophecy is being fulfilled in Israel right now, and that the world is about to come to a kind of conclusion, a wrap-up. I have heard people say this week, the rapture is not far off. I know that there are some who believe that there will be a period of tribulation, of great tribulation, unlike the world has ever seen, before Jesus returns. Others believe that Jesus will return, and after he takes the saints out of this world, there'll be a period of great tribulation, etc., etc. There are a number of different beliefs surrounding all of what may happen and what is ahead of us in the future. This morning, I saw, it's Becky and I's custom to get up of a morning early and drink coffee. And while we're drinking coffee, we usually look at social media and catch up on, you know, who's posting what and so on and so forth. I saw one this morning. It was an advertisement for this person. You pay so much for this course, and this person claims that he will take all of the allegories that are found in the Bible and a lot of other things, and even numbers from various different sources, and he'll put them all together and explain to you exactly how the world is going to come to an end. And as curious as I may be, I'm not willing to spend the money he's asking to see what his ideas are there. There are a lot of ideas out there. A lot of people sincerely and earnestly believe that things are about to end. In fact, and this has been a few years ago, was teaching in a business college, and one of the ladies that we had hired there told the students, listen, there's not really any need for you going through school and trying to get an education because the world is going to end within the next couple of years anyway. As you might imagine, the college wasn't real happy about her telling students that. We kind of want them to get prepared. And there are people, though, who seriously believe the world is going to end within the next decade or less. Well, as you might expect, I'm not going to say it's this, 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 and this. I know some ministers who are not always right, but they're always certain. And they will tell you this is exactly what's going to happen. I'm not one of those. And I'll be as honest as I can be. I don't know. I don't know what will happen. I want us, though, to step back and look at it from kind of what I call a 30,000 feet view. If you look at things from up there, it looks different. Step back 2,000 years. When Jesus arrived, he found that the Jewish establishment was looking forward to a coming Messiah. They envisioned that this Messiah would be someone who would run the Romans out of Israel and who would reestablish the throne of David, who would rebuild everything, and Israel would be, if not one of the greatest, the greatest nation on earth. And they just knew that this coming Messiah was going to set up this kingdom here on earth and that they would follow that, you know, forever. In fact, looking back to Isaiah 9, 6, and 7, and this is thousands of years ago, prophesying about Jesus, it says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us is given, a son is given, and the government shall be on his shoulders. And his name shall be Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. And upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and justice from henceforth even forever, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this." This prophecy was repeated to Mary when it found that she was with child. So you might kind of get the idea that Jesus is going to come and he's going to establish this kingdom. In Luke chapter 1, verses 31, 33, "And behold," talking to Mary, "behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He shall be great and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David, and he shall reign over the house of David and Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end." So I kind of understand why the Jewish establishment at that time thought that Jesus was going to come and set up a physical earthly kingdom. That's reasonable. And the Pharisees and the lawyers, the people who were head of the church, were very devoted people. Now, they weren't right a lot of the time, but they were very devoted, so much so that they had the laws sewn into the hem of their garment. They memorized the law. And if you look at the Torah at that time, the thing is huge. They had it set to memory. They knew it word for word. They followed it precisely. They would do exactly what was called for in there. So much so that some of them, even if you remember the Pharisee that was praying and he looked at the publican and said, "I thank you that I'm not like this man." He said, "I fast 3 times a week. Have you ever tried fasting? Becky and I, when we were getting ready to start this church, fasted. We fasted one day a week for a period of time. It's hard. I remember that very well. At Sunday night, we would eat supper, and we would not eat anything until Tuesday morning. And we go all day without eating, and every time you get hungry, you pray. It does focus your mind. I can't imagine doing that 3 times a week. That would be an enormous thing to do. These were devoted people, is what I'm trying to get across. But they were wrong. When Jesus came, his message was, you've got it wrong. You're looking for a physical kingdom, and I am spiritual. Many of Jesus' followers even had it wrong. In Matthew, then it says, Matthew chapter 20, 21 and 22, then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshiping him, talking about Jesus, and desiring a certain thing of him. And she asked, can my son sit on your right hand and on your left hand when you come into your kingdom? And he said unto her, what wilt thou? And she said, grant that these my sons may sit on your right and your left. And Jesus said, you don't know what you're asking for. You don't understand. My kingdom is not of this world. In Matthew 18, I'm sorry, he said, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, then would my servants fight. Yet I'm looking for a world not made with physical hands. We need to understand that as devoted and devout as they were, they read the ancient prophecies, they studied them in depth, and they got it completely wrong. In fact, at one point, speaking to the lawyers, the doctors of the Jewish law, Jesus said, the harlots will enter the kingdom of heaven before you will. They got it wrong. On October 31st, 1517, Halloween, wasn't celebrated as Halloween then, Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of Wittenberg Castle Church, and the Protestant Reformation began. John Calvin, John Wesley, some others took place in that. But the central message to the Catholic Church at that time is you've got it wrong. You may be studied, you may have all of this law and all of these ceremonies, and they did have elaborate ceremonies. But God spoke through these men to the church, and he said, you've got it wrong. You've gone off in the wrong direction. You're leading people astray. So if we look at these and thousands of other examples, literally, there are over time, repeated time and time and time again, human beings like you and I get it wrong. So when I hear people today say, well, this is going to happen, and this is a sign that this is happening, and they go back and read, you know, some of the visions of some of the prophets, and they were holy men, but they will talk about a wheel and a wheel, and they will talk about beasts that have horns and various things. I don't know what that means, and neither does anyone else, honestly. I don't care what commentary you read, I don't care what famous minister you follow, if they tell you that they know what's going to happen because of what's going on in Israel today, they're wrong. I'm sorry, but we don't know. God has not enlightened me or anyone else as to exactly what's going to happen. There's a lot of people also at this time that are worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. People are preparing for calamity. Have you noticed that? There are a lot of doomsday preppers out there. And I'll be honest, Becky and I have stored up some food stuff. We've bought some non-perishables. We've set up some things so that if the supply chain isn't available, if I can't get something to eat, then obviously we've got some stuff on hand. I have more firearms and ammunition than my wife thinks I ought to have, but hey, any excuse to go buy another gun, right? We are worried. I think our entire nation is worried about what's going to happen, and I don't blame them. You know, it has happened before. In October 1347, a ship from the Crimea and Asia docked in Sicily. And aboard the ship were not only sailors, but there were rats that got off. And those rats carried fleas that carried the plague. And the Black Death, or the plague, entered Europe. You know that during that plague, 50% of the population died. 200 million people. That's an amazing disaster. Are you familiar with the kids' little song, Ring Around the Rosies, Pocket Full of Posies, et cetera, et cetera? That comes from the plague. Ring Around the Rosies was a rash that people got when they got the plague. Pocket Full of Posies, people believed the smell is what carried the plague. They didn't know, so they would stuff flowers in their pockets to try to ward off the smell. And that's where a lot of the funeral sprays and a lot of the flowers that we see on graves come from, warding off the smell of death because they thought that's what carried it. Ashes to ashes, they burned everything, and then at last we all fall dead. The plague in Europe was a disaster. Unmitigated, absolute disaster. In 1929, the United States stock market crashed and the country entered the Great Depression. John Steinbeck documented it in the movie, or the book that became a movie, of Mice and Men. Or I'm sorry, wrong one. The Grapes of Wrath. If you've ever seen that or read that book, it is amazing. Merle Haggard documented it in a popular song from my youth, Mama's Hungry Eyes. Have you ever heard that? I've seen pictures of people who lived through the Depression, and you could get that. You could see the desperation, the lostness in their eyes. It has happened before. My parents and my wife's parents lived through that experience, and I can tell you it had a massive impact on them. As a result of World War II, which started not long after that, 50 million people were killed, and the economy of Europe was absolutely decimated. I remember as a child going with my father, was a disabled veteran, and we'd take him to the VA hospital. And I remember going there, and I can remember seeing veterans who had literally seen too much, who had been involved and had seen death and destruction and murder firsthand too long. And some of them kind of stared out into space, and some of them sat there and cried. Grown men, strong men, but there's a limit to what they can take. That happened not that long ago. So when we look at what's going on today, I just want us to be aware it can happen again. I don't know what will happen in our economy. I love to watch, I kind of keep the business news going on the television in my office all the time, and I kind of watch that stock market go up and down, and I get a little bit amused at it, somewhat amazed. It seems, I think sometimes, like a giant Ponzi or pyramid scheme, but that's another story. But I hear people say, this is what's going to happen, da 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 da. And I have had enough experience and lived long enough to know they don't really know. No one can tell you what will happen to the stock market tomorrow. There are too many things, there are too many factors, there's too much going on. So we get conspiracy theories going on. And, I like those as much as anybody. They're a bit interesting. Sometimes we hear conspiracy theories such as, did John F. Kennedy, was he actually killed by Oswald? Or was there another group? Was there somebody on the grassy knoll? Or was it Johnson doing this? Is he the one that caused this? Or maybe it was the Cubans, or maybe it was this group or that group. There are a lot of conspiracy theories. And there are about the economy today. But the truth is, I don't know, and you don't either. So what do we know? What is it that I can say, this I know? What can I build my life on? I know that God is on the throne. I know that the God I serve is in control. Yes, there may be some horrible things happen. And, you know, some of us may lose our life. I wonder sometimes what's the next pandemic they're cooking up in China or somewhere else on the earth that's going to be loosed on us. And I don't know, and it may be terrible. God is still on the throne. And I know that He has saved me from my sin and rebirthed me. I am alive spiritually. And it doesn't matter what happens. That can't be stopped and that can't be undone. I have said jokingly, referring to the end times, that I am a pan-millennialist. And I don't mean that to sound flippant. I believe that Jesus will take care of it, whatever it is. If there's a massive tribulation that we all have to go through, I want to go through that as a Christian. I want to get on my knees and pray and know that God hears my prayer. If there is none, I know that I will stand in the presence of Almighty God. I know these things. And I know that you and I, together as a church, can build a bridge to the next world. I preached a sermon one time, not too long ago, at this church, talking about Noah and building the ark. And I said that what we are doing as a church is we're building an ark. We're building a vessel to take us from this world to the next world. That's what church is about. That's why we're here. It's not about me having control and everything has to be done my way. It's not about numbers. It's not about, oh, geez, we need 1,000 or we need 1,500 people. It's not about that. And it's not about any one person or even a group of people. It is all of us if we can work together as a group and we can seek God's will in our lives and in our community. As a church, we can transport people from this world to the next. I said this morning at prayer request, I mentioned Cody leading the singing and how I wish my mother could hear that. And, you know, maybe she can. I don't know again. But I know someday I'll see her again and know someday we'll be reunited. As a church, I am thankful that we can have young people, my young people, your young people, that we can get together and we can build that vessel where they can base their lives, where they can have something that they can stand on. I feel sorry for young people that go out today and face the world as it is. I wonder sometimes, honestly, I don't know how a young couple makes it. When you look at what a house costs, what a car costs, what just living costs, how do young couples just starting out, how do they make it? Becky and I went out yesterday and ate, and honestly, we didn't have a bowl of soup each. We had a cup of soup. And they brought me the bill, and I looked at it, it's $30. I'm like, we just had a cup of soup, you know? Okay, we had some cheese dip with it, whatever, but really, $30 and for just this little bit? How does a young couple that's just said I do and jumped out there trying to make it, how do they live? I don't know. And I don't know what tomorrow will bring for them. I don't know if they'll be able to buy a house. I don't know if they'll be able to have a family. I don't know. But I know this. God is on the throne. And if you and I as a church will unite, if we will unite more than we ever have before, it is important for us to be united. If we can do that, we can face whatever this world brings and we can change the world. Jesus' disciples, after he was crucified, met in an upper room. There weren't a lot of them. And they were an outnumbered group. You talk about persecution, tribulation. There were people actively hunting them, wanting to kill them. and they met in that room, and they prayed until they got to a point where they were in one mind and one accord. And when they left that room that way, the Spirit of God fell on them, and they changed the world. Church of, or Family of Faith Church, if we will get to a point where we're in one mind and one accord, put aside, I want this, I want this, you ought to do this, you ought to do that, put all the nonsense aside, and let's get on our knees and say, God, what do you want us to do? Get on our knees and ask for his guidance. If we'll do that, he'll do his part. And I don't care what happens in the future, God will take care of us. There is a hanging, a banner, a sign. Be out shortly. It says the world is a cold place. If the church will build a fire, the world will come and warm by it. C.C. Kitchen said that. I heard it years and years ago, and my son had that made for me at Christmas one year. It's true for us. It's a cold place out there. The young people and old people who are having to deal with this world find it to be a cold, forbidding place. If we will get together and get in God's will, if we build a fire spiritually, people will come and warm by it. And we can see souls saved, and we can see lives changed. That's what's going to happen. That's my prediction for the future. We're going to get on our knees, and we're going to stay there until we get in God's will, and God is going to take care of it. That's the way I see this thing coming, and that's what I'm going to work toward. If our musicians will come this morning as we sing, I want us to have the opportunity. I don't care what's going on in your life or what you need. If you have anything you're afraid of, if there are problems, if your family is a problem, I invite you to come here, get on your knees and pray.